Before class began, I found out something about a couple of our young people. I found out that Wyatt would not be happy if they wanted to look for a pitcher, and he was put in competition with another young man, and so they're going to see how well he can pitch, and so they give the other young man an 8-ounce hardball, and they give Wyatt a 12-ounce hardball. They're supposed to be 8 ounces. And the guy said, all right, y'all pitch. Of course, the other guy who got the 8-ounce hardball, he's the fellow who's doing the test. It's his son. Huh. But now, he pulled both of those baseballs out of his bag when it was time to give him a chance to pitch. I found out that these lacrosse players feel the same way. That when it comes to competition, are you going to be able to play on this team? These lacrosse sticks weigh a certain amount. And so if Lorelei, for example, was going to be put up against somebody else, they said, okay, Lorelei. The guy will go get his sports bag. He says, here's your stick. She picks it up and said, boy, this feels heavy. It's 6 pounds. And the other girl, again, the manager's daughter, hers is a 2-pound. He said, wait a minute, what's going on here? You reckon the parents that have complained to the leagues about fairness? Something's not fair. Look in your Bible and say, what's this got to do with the family? Well, I'll show you. Look at Leviticus chapter 19. You have a whole section here that begins in verse 9 following, but you have right in the middle of that this statement in verse 18, which summarizes all of the negatives and positives that you have there. And it's the second greatest commandment. Love your neighbor as yourself, verse 18. How does that play out in real life? There's nothing here about hugging, sweet little words. It's not mistreating your neighbor and making allowances that will help your neighbor. But I want to note verse 15. Here's one of them. You shall do no injustice in judgment. You shall not be partial to the poor, nor defer to the great. But you're to judge your neighbor fairly. So fair judgment. Treat people equally, whether they're poor or rich, whether a relative or not a relative. Treat people fairly. And what's interesting is when you get to verse 35, again he talks about judgment. He says, you shall do no wrong in judgment. So in verse 15, that's what he said. You should not mistreat people in how you judge them. But this time he said, in measurement of weight or capacity, you shall have just balances, just weights, a just ephah, and a just hin. I am the Lord your God. So the authority behind this is the God of the Exodus, the God of Israel, the God of creation. Now, if you go over to Deuteronomy chapter 25, in this sermon that Moses preaches, look over at verse 13. You shall not have in your bag, remember those two guys that were testing these young people, they got a bag. One got a bag of baseballs, one got a bag of lacrosse sticks. You shall not have in your bag differing weights. A large and a small. You shall not have in your house differing measures. A large and a small. What's that got to do with anything? Same thing that you've read in Leviticus 19. Look at verse 15. You shall have a full and just weight. You shall have a full and just measure. Verse 16, everyone who does these things, everyone who acts unjustly is an abomination to the Lord your God. So just as in the case of these two young people, if that happened, it would be unjust, it would be unfair, it would show they did not love these young people with that neighborly love. It'd be wrong. What's that got to do with the family? Well, we're looking here at question number 6 on communication. And we notice that Job felt insulted, he felt wronged, because his friends were charging him unjustly. We say, well, that's wrong. Let me ask you something. Does it make any difference if the person is your husband or your wife? Your child? your brother, your sister? Does a marriage license give you the right or the license to ignore these kind of responsibilities? But what we sometimes do, we have two different weights in our bag. One, to weigh myself. And one, to weigh my mate. It's not right. It's not fair. And if you deal with somebody like that, like these young people, how long would they or how long would their parents want them to play for that kind of a coach?
Not very long.
Not very long. And so if you live in that kind of a marriage where you have different weights, you judge your mate differently than the judgments you judge yourself with, and charge them rashly with doing wrong because you're angry or you're hurt or whatever, you ruin that relationship. You certainly don't encourage communication. So anyway, I want to show that these very verses talk about this concept of judging people fairly. Use the same judgment with your mate that you do with yourself. Now, I say all of that, that does not mean it's easy. Because our feelings go into play, our defenses, we want to defend ourselves, and that's where we need to do some self-examination. Okay, look at Proverbs 26:12. Do you see a man wise in his own eyes? There is more hope for a fool than for him. Do you think you have wisdom? Don't lie. Sure you do. You're wise in your own eyes, aren't you? But what is the difference in being confident that you can make wise decisions than the fellow in this text? What's the difference? No difference?
This wise in your own eyes is more about pride, inconsiderate.
Okay. It's an exaggerated sense of your wisdom, isn't it? Out of your, like Josh says, out of your pride. And so, when we are unable to recognize our own weaknesses, one of the things that's sometimes very difficult for people to say, but they can go a long way to building good relationships, are the three words.
I was wrong.
And so, certainly we think we have wisdom. We want to have wisdom. That's why we're studying tonight, to gain wisdom. But we make mistakes. We make mistakes in our judgments. And so, this can certainly affect our relationship, because obviously if every time you talk to somebody, they're always right, does that encourage you to have communication with them next time?
No.
Certainly not. Now, the answer to that is not admitting you're wrong when you're not. That's not the thing. But trying to be just in our measurement of ourselves, that's a challenge. But that goes a long way to building a good relationship. Look at Proverbs 28:13. He who conceals his transgressions will not prosper. But he who confesses and forsakes them will find compassion. Or the New King James and the English Standard Version says mercy. You think, well, if I say I'm wrong, that's going to hurt me. That's going to lower the estimation. No, in fact, it may cause the other person to look upon you with compassion and mercy. Just admit, I messed up. I'm sorry. And so it's another wise saying to help us in our dealing with our fellow man. I've got on your lesson Philippians 2. We're not going to read it for sake of time. It's the verse that says to esteem others more than yourself, to be humble in mind like Christ was, to think of the good of others. It's a great passage. Matthew chapter 7, 1 through 5. You're very familiar with this passage. Do not judge lest you be judged. And I think most everybody in this audience, I probably would not be wrong to say everybody in this audience, knows this is not a verse that forbids judging. We know that Jesus expects us to judge because of verse 15. We're to judge who's a false prophet. Beware of the false prophets. So when he talks about do not judge, we have to interpret in the light of the context. And there's two facets of the judging that he's talking about. He said, in the way you judge, you will be judged. By your standard of measure, it will be measured to you. Why do you look at the speck that's in your brother's eye and do not notice the log that is in your own eye? There's two facets of it. One, it's hypocritical. You're judging somebody for what you do, number one. But there's another aspect. You're looking for the tiniest thing. Not a major thing. The speck in his eye. And so it's hypercritical judging as well as hypocritical judging. That's in view. And so I asked the question, well, it's in my notes, what is judging hypocritically? And I just explained it. And what is judging hypercritically? Now, why did Jesus warn against hypocritical and hypercritical judging in the text? Why did he warn against it? What? That's what?
That is how people judge.
That's what I wanted. Right. Good. Because, he said, that's how you're going to be judged. That's going to be the standard of measure by which you will be treated. Now, that's certainly true of God, isn't it? And oftentimes of our fellow man. So you're trying to maintain a good relationship with a mate, a brother, a sister, a parent, a child. So there's times to say, you're wrong. But be sure you're not guilty of the same thing. And that you're not picking out some little old bitty thing that gives you some kind of reason to raise the hammer of guilt. And so it's a good passage to enable us to have better relationships. Okay, let's go to Proverbs chapter 12, verse 25. The New American Standard translates it, anxiety in a man's heart weighs it down. The King James Version uses the word heaviness. You ever have a heavy heart? We use that phrase, don't we? The Young's literal translation says sorrow. Sometimes you just feel sorry in your heart. And it weighs the heart down. What can lift that weight? What can bring you some joy? What can help with the sorrow you feel? Well, look at the last part of this proverb. A good word makes it glad. There's times in living together as husband and wife, parent and child, or brother and sister that there's need for words of reproof and rebuke, correction. But what about a good word? Do we ever think about those kind of things? And especially is this true relative to husbands and wives? You know, men and women will criticize one another. You didn't do this, or you didn't do this, or you said this in a certain way, or you whatever. But what about some good words? Now, I put down in your lesson, give some examples of a good word between husbands and wives.
I love you.
That's an excellent one. I love you. Should a day go by in a relationship where you don't tell your mate more than once, sincerely, I love you? That's a good one. What else?
I appreciate you.
Yes, we criticize. Yes, we make faults. But what about, I appreciate who you are, and how you live, and how you treat me, and how you take care of the family and the house. I just appreciate you. I appreciate you for your godliness or your kindness or whatever it may be. What else?
Thank you.
That's good. Thank you. You ever say, you know, men, you get through with the meal. You ever tell your wife, sweetheart, thank you for that good meal? Or you say, oh, excuse me, I got to go watch the sports, or I've got to go mow the yard. How about thank you? Women, you ever tell your husbands, thank you for working to support us? You get up early, you work all day. Thank you for providing for us. Ever tell your children when they obey you, thank you, son, daughter, we appreciate what you're doing. Makes it much more pleasant to strive to fulfill the role of a parent. Thank you. That's a good one. What else? Teaching the children to say thank you. Very good. Here's some that I put down. Thank you for loving me like you do. You ever tell your mate that? Thank you for loving. When they don't, we sure tell them about that. You need to learn to love me better. You ever say, thank you for loving me like you do? You ever tell your mate, I'm proud of you. I really am. I'm honored to be your mate, your husband, your wife. we readily can see the mistakes they make and hard and harsh things we're said to make. Sorry I ever married you. You're stupid. Whatever. How sad. He said, I'm proud of you. Maybe you ought to be proud of him for staying with you. And then, you ever just tell your mate, you sure do look good. Men, let me ask you something. What's important to a woman in her attire? Men, what's important to a woman in her attire? What looks good?
Her hair.
Okay, her hair is one thing. If she changes her hairstyle, fix it, do you say, man, your hair looks good today? Or do you just go on to work? You ever tell her? Maybe she spent 15, 20 minutes trying to fix her hair. What else is very important in a woman's attire?
Her clothes.
Her clothes? So she gets a new dress. She puts it on. She wants to look nice. She ever said, boy, that's a nice looking dress. You know, some men never even notice. They don't even say anything about it. Here's one. Shoes. You guys don't think about the shoes. You go get a pair of shoes. Shoes are important to women. You ever say, boy, those are nice looking shoes. Come on, folks. We want a good relationship. Here's words of wisdom, a good word makes a guy. Maybe she's had a tough day. Maybe she's got a tough day ahead, or vice versa. Any good words to lift the anxiety or the heaviness or the sorrow of heart? You know, it's interesting sometimes people commend others. I've known of people that will write cards expressing sympathy for something in their life or congratulating for their birthday or and boy, people think, boy, they are so attentive and kind and thoughtful, but never do it to their mate. A good word can lift the heaviness and the sorrow, the weight that people might be carrying. So, we want to build our relationships. Be sincere. You may can see insincerity.
It's interesting in Proverbs, we read the power of some negative effects, and also a very positive effect. Well,
yeah.
Good word.
What kind of negative things, John? What kind of negative thing?
Destroy a person.
Can you give me some examples? You don't want to give me an example. You're right, John. Negative things can be destructive and can cause the heaviness of heart and the sorrow. I'm not saying there's not times that you have to say something negative. You do. But how many times is there day in, day out, week in and week out where we could make our relationships more enjoyable? If from the time we get up to the time we close our eyes at night, we look for opportunities to commend sincerely and genuinely our mate, our children. Yes, somebody had a hand up back there. Yes. Very good. Think about what makes them happy. What we can do together, you know. Maybe they like pizza. Hey, you want to get a slice of pizza? Or whatever it may be, you know. Of course, that's not hard for Don. Craig likes everything. About everything. But, so, you might think, you know, what that's a good thing that James is thinking about. He's thinking about the other person. What could lift their heart? And so, not only a word, but the things that you suggest in your life. Look, these are simple things, but folks, oftentimes they're not practiced in a marriage. We get married, we just kind of take it for granted and move along. I got on the bus and I'll stay on the bus till I die. Wait a minute. You ran to get on the bus, you quit running once you get the marriage going. And so let's work on it every day. Proverbs 9:7, he who corrects a scoffer gets dishonor. Now the King James, New King James says shame, ESV. Says abuse. Who corrects a scoffer gets abuse or shame or dishonor for himself. And who reproves a wicked man gets insults for himself. If you reprove somebody and they hurl it back and try to hurt you and shame you and dishonor you and say all kinds of things about you, are you ready to to say something when you have a disagreement about something they do or say next time? You know, communication is sharing on a common plane the thoughts that people have. So I ain't sharing nothing with this person because I know how they react. They're going to jump all over me. And so these are words of wisdom to help us. You know, if we lash back, instead of striving to respond with a gentle spirit, consider what's being said. It's not going to encourage communication. Now look at Proverbs chapter 12, verse 1. There's so much in this book, and of course they're general principles, but they have so many practical applications to everyday living. We're making application to the family. That make application between brethren. It's like when you meet here, do you even talk to your other brethren? Do the people on this side talk to the people on that side? Do you ever say, man, I'm so glad you're here. It's important to me. Those kind of things. We sometimes don't even know their names, hardly. But here's Proverbs 12:1. Whoever loves discipline loves knowledge, and who hates reproof is stupid. So here's the other side of that. Sir. My mate don't love me, they reprove me. No, they may be a person that really loves you, and that's why they're saying what they do. And if I don't want any reproof, guess who's stupid? And so these verses that we read here, Proverbs 9:7, these kind of verses are not saying there's no room for reproof, especially if you love somebody. Look at chapter 27, verse 5. Better is open rebuke than love that is concealed. Faithful are the wounds of a friend, but deceitful are the kisses of an enemy. Somebody who really loves you may hurt you because they love you. People who just want to get along, they won't tell you. They let you embarrass yourself and do things wrong. They're more interested in themselves and not getting any kind of backlash than they are helping you. Faithful are the wounds of a friend. In chapter 28, verse 23, look. He who rebukes a man will afterward find more favor than he who flatters with his tongue. Of course, that's assuming the other guy has enough sense to recognize, this person rebuked me. I didn't like it. It hurt. But they loved me. I see that now. I needed that. And I wonder if we ever go back and say thank you. So these are just general principles. You'll have to work on the application. But these are general principles to help us in our relationships with our fellow man. So they work with brethren, don't they? They work with your neighbor. They work with your co-worker. What about in the family life? What about between brothers and sisters? So these are proverbs to help us. Look at Proverbs chapter 17, verse 9. And it's these kind of attitudes and conduct that would encourage communication, sharing what's on your heart and mind. That's what communication is. The other person may not agree, but at least you can share how you feel about things. Proverbs chapter 17, verse 9. How important is this in communication? He who conceals a transgression seeks love, but he who repeats a matter separates intimate friends. Now, you're not talking about hiding sin. You know, people out here stealing, lying, drinking, getting drunk, but I ain't going to tell anybody. That's not what he's talking about. We all make mistakes, I guess, daily. But you realize, you know, that person, maybe they didn't feel good that day. They didn't even realize they hurt me or what. You love. You conceal a transgression, or you can just keep on harping on it. And tomorrow, and next week, you think you're going to make your mate your best friend? No. If it's your brother or sister? No. And so, same thing with parents and children. Okay, you reprove your child, you get them straightened out, but don't make that a thing you harp on all the time. And so, who should be your best friend other than your husband or wife? Shouldn't they be your best friend? So, I'm going to go talk to my best friend, my guy at work, or I'm going to go talk to my best friend, this girl I associate with. Shouldn't your mate be your best friend that you can pour out your heart to? He says, I can't. Because they're going to bring up something in the past and just try to beat me over the head with it. So if we want to generate communication, we need to think about these kind of proverbs. If you have a comment or question, just raise your hand or speak out. Look at John 21. Over in John 21, 21. We have verse 20. The disciple whom Jesus loved was leaning back on his bosom at supper. Verse 21, Peter seeing him said to Jesus, Lord, what about this man? Jesus said, if I want him to remain till I come, what is that to you? You follow me. Therefore, this saying went out among the brethren that the disciple would not die. Did Jesus say he wouldn't die?
No.
Look, John, by the guidance of the Holy Spirit, wrote this. Yet Jesus did not say to him that he would not die, but only, what's the big word?
If.
Two-letter word. If. Sometimes when husbands and wives try to communicate, they draw conclusions that are unwarranted. Didn't say that. And the same thing here with Jesus and John. And so Jesus said, if he remains till I come. What business is that of yours, Peter? Oh, Jesus said John wouldn't die. Treat people fairly. We misinterpret other people's words. We can do it as brethren and cause problems, but boy, in the family, very important to try to understand. Communication is not just talking. We talked about that when we began this study. It's striving to truly have the comment or question common between two people. Now you can decide whether you agree or not. We need to talk about it further. Listen to our mates. Try to be fair. And parents, this is a challenge with parents. Be sure and listen to your children. Maybe they didn't really say what you thought they said, and vice versa. So if we want communication, John 21 is a great example. Look at Proverbs 18. Proverbs 18 and verse 13. He who gives an answer before he hears is a folly and a shame to him. What happens when we are listening to somebody complain or rebuke us or is that a problem? What are we sometimes doing? Okay, what are we thinking about?
Our response.
How are we going to respond? Instead of listening, we've already formed our response. Wait. Who gives answer before he hears? Not just hear sounds. Not just hear word, but communication. Understand what the real problem is. You know, we talked about these problems in husbands and wives in these first couple lessons, and barriers to that is failure to communicate. And so try to understand how your mate feels. They may not be able to get exactly the right words. Maybe they're even embarrassed to tell you. Men don't want to lay themselves out like maybe a woman does. Try to listen. Try to understand. And vice versa. Especially if we can't conceal a matter, if we're going to go run and tell somebody else. So anyway, it's a wise saying about the need to be sure that we're understanding, we're communicating before we respond. Look at Ephesians chapter 4. We ask this question, what does this verse teach about anger? But I want to ask you a question first before you answer that one. Is it ever right to be angry?
Yes.
You said yes. How would you prove it?
Jesus
was angry. Moses was angry. Nehemiah was angry. There's times it's right to be angry. But this verse is warning about anger. He said, be angry and do not sin. So anger can open the door. It's a dangerous thing. You know, there are things that are good but are dangerous. An axe is a good tool, but you can cut your foot off with it. Right? Anger can be... I'm not saying people ought not have a temper. There's times to have a temper. But he says, be angry and sin not. So we ask what this verse teaches about anger. That's one thing. What else does it tell you about anger? That's right. Don't let the sun go down on your wrath. So what do you do as a husband and wife? You're angry. But I got to go to bed. Look, everybody's different. I know that. And what works for one couple may not work for the other. Those of you that have heard me teach before, heard me talk about this, you know. My wife and I made an agreement when we got married, we're not going to go to bed and go to sleep angry at one another. Result, we spent some sleepless nights. Till one of us finally gets so tired to fess up, you know. But the thing about that is you start the new day fresh. If that thing's lingering tomorrow, and the person gets up and says one little thing wrong, what happens? You know? Don't let the sun go down in your eyes. And that thing, if you harbor it, you write it down in your book of memory. The next day some little something happens, you write it down, the next day something happens. All of a sudden there's an explosion. So what happened? This is what happens sometimes in husband-wife relationships. And so here's divine counsel for Christians. Okay, very good, Alex. Alex said he thinks about how the Lord taught us to pray. To forgive your fellow man. If you don't, God won't forgive you. Over in James chapter 2, look at James chapter 2. Verse 13. I don't know if I can forgive him. What about this verse? Judge won't be merciless to one who's shown no mercy. How about at least be merciful in our judgment? And so, that's something to think about. And if I won't go, and this is a thing that will well in our hearts if we think about that. I'm going to go to bed and pray tonight for God to be merciful to me. Well, how have I treated people today? My mate, my parents, my children, my brother, my sister. Remember when you pray, what Alex call our attention to. Look at Colossians chapter 3. We're not going to spend much time on this, but these are attitudes that are helpful to communication. Just attitudes, character traits that will make it so much easier for us to live with one another as brethren. That's the context. Well, suppose that brother or sister is your mate. You're living with them every day. Well, look at these attitudes. We got these attitudes that are specified here, Colossians 3:12. He says, put on a heart of compassion and kindness and humility, gentleness and patience, bearing with one another, forgiving each other, whoever has a complaint against anyone. Look at that last phrase. Just as the Lord forgave you. Boy, there's motivation. Well, I forgave him yesterday. Did you pray for forgiveness last night? Are you going to do it tonight? And tomorrow night? So, look at verse 14. Beyond all these things, put on love, which is the perfect bond of unity. It's the unity between brethren. What about unity in a family? Brother Powell, who was visiting here Sunday morning, you know, preached on the family, taught on the family. He said, he asked me, he said, what do you think is the, if you had to use one word to describe why people have so much problem in their family. I don't remember exactly how he worded it, but that was the idea. One word. I said, that's a good question. He said, selfishness. I said, that's a good answer. Because we're thinking of self. Good thought. Appreciate it, Brother Powell, bringing that up. And then 1 Corinthians 13. We're going to spend some more time on 1 Corinthians 13. We talk about carrying love, because that's what that verse is about. You know this chapter, 13, 4 through 7. And I know that he's talking about applying it there to love between brethren. But why? Wouldn't it apply to your husband, your wife, your children, your parents, your brother, your sister? What a difference it would make if we could learn to be patient and kind and not jealous and not brag, etc. Those things that are mentioned in that text. Okay, so my time up? Okay, I'm going to take one more minute. So that was all nice and good, but we start making excuses like, well, I don't care. Marriage is good enough, or that's not my problem, it's their problem. Or, you know, it's just too hard. And I've got a whole list here. You can think of others. All those are excuses that the devil wants us to make that are working on the family relationship. You can study with this subject this whole month, 3 months, and not see one iota of difference in your family. It's up to you and it's up to me. Blessed are you if you do them, Jesus said. Think about it. Thank you for your attention and your comments tonight.